Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This is Cheap Date. I'm sorry, this is Let's Eat In. It used to be called Cheap Date on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Roberta's Pizza. And today's show is actually brought to you by Whole Foods Market. So let's get right down to it. We have a couple of really, really exciting guests on the show today. And to introduce the first, I just wanted to read a little... Actually, the very beginning of her book, which is called I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti. Whenever I start dating someone new, I just can't hold back. No matter how often my girlfriends warn me, take it slow, let him win you over, don't give it away so quickly, I just can't resist. I have to cook for him. For me, a new boyfriend is a tantalizing opportunity to show off the thing I'm most confident about, my cooking. I assess the gastronomic inclinations of the man in question at first sight, and my guesses are usually right. I've made every kind of food, from simple pastas to slow-cooking stews and moist, beautifully seasoned roasts accompanied by perfectly browned potatoes and bright, crisp vegetables. I've made chocolate cakes, cheesecakes, and cakes filled with seasonal fruits. And I've dated every sort of man, artist, lawyer, banker, and writer, kind and unkind, ready to commit and as amenable to commitment as I am to eating at the Olive Garden. So that was by Julia Malucci, the author. And what better way to start off a show that's about cooking and food and love? Thanks so much for being here on the
show
today.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you and Julie Powell. Very exciting and fun to be sitting in a backyard in Bushwick.
Yeah, on this kind of chilly Monday.
It's
but
cozy.
Yeah.
It really is.
We'll heat things up a little bit, I'm sure, as time goes on.
I hope.
So we also have an exceptional writer today, who wrote a recent book called Cleaving, and I'm just going to read actually a recipe from it, which is for Valentine's Day liver for two. Ingredients, yada yada. Spread flour in a large plate. Season the liver slices with salt and pepper, then dredge in the flour, shaking off excess. Set a skillet over high heat and add butter and oil. When the butter foam has just subsided, add the liver slices. Saute just until a crispy golden brown crust develops, about 2 minutes. Flip the slices and do the same on the other side. Don't worry about undercooking. Overcooking is by far the worst fate for liver. Beef liver cooked like this, I keep telling people in the face of near universal scoffs of disbelief, is one of the most, well, passionate things you'll ever eat. I don't know exactly why this is. It's as sexy as hell, but difficult, too. Somehow faintly forlorn, like there's no denying that something was torn from something for your pleasure. So, Julie Powell, in the house.
In the house.
Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, yeah, Brooklyn. Absolutely, man. Here I am.
Yeah. And so you guys are both local writers, obviously, and we're so fortunate to have you guys just pop in on a Monday afternoon.
It's a good way to live, right?
Yeah, it really is. I need to keep it going as long as possible. I want to make that liver, but it's terrible. I feel awful. I don't like liver. Well, but maybe I'll try it because it's a beautiful recipe. It is beautifully written, and it makes you a little hot for liver.
Well, I'm a big missionary on the liver thing, but I do realize I'm in the minority here. It's an uphill battle.
It seems very, I feel very, you know, parochial for not liking it, but I...
Well, you're not alone. You're not alone.
I didn't think I was into liver too much, but I think I can be convinced by...
by
maybe
such
we'll
a
try for
testament.
Valentine's Day.
There I think
go.
So.
There you go.
Maybe we do.
I should have brought some.
Damn.
Ooh. There's
next
always
time.
Pizza.
Yeah. Well, pizza works too.
Pizza with liver. How about that?
Mm.
So, Julie, your new book, everyone knows you from Julie and Julia, which is a huge movie, exciting movie. Yeah. And yeah, we all see it. We all loved it. And somebody just told me recently that they cried at 3 points watching it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm sort of embarrassed. I've seen the movie 7.5 times, the last half being on a plane across country, and I was doing everything I could to avoid watching it. I watched.
Were people in the next seat like, oh my God?
Well, no. I don't get, no, but they were watching it, which is a very freaky thing.
And you didn't
thing.
Say anything?
And, oh like, God,
you
no.
You
can't. No. Hey, that's my movie.
If you were, you know what I mean? No. Maybe if I was tipsy, I would say something.
No. Not at all. Not me. I'd have to be, and I was tipsy, but I sat through the entire Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince or whatever. I mean, everything I could do to avoid it, and I finally did wind up flipping over to it, and I cried a little, and I was really embarrassed at myself. It's just weird. It's weird.
Watching, yeah.
It's weird. So.
And it's also just a very heartfelt movie. You could just...
In a Nora Ephron kind of way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put it to that. Next time somebody asks. But your next book is a really, really, I thought it was an adventurous and risky book for you, for anyone to write, really. And as we go on, I love just opening with that just really explicit explanation of liver. And we talk about more carnal desires as the book goes
yes.
on. There's like, it's just a really visceral exploration about food. On the one hand, butchery.
Right.
On the other hand, an extramarital affair. So a really yeah. intense look at love and food. And I'm so glad for you for putting that out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I needed to do it. I think anyone who writes, I'm sure you know, anyone who writes uses their personal life for creative fodder does it because there's something about that process of writing that becomes vital to processing the experience. And I wrote Cleaving in the wake of an extraordinarily difficult and messy and horrifying period in my life and my marriage, and I had to, in order to get through to the other side, I had to write that book.
Right.
So
yeah, it's been said that people who are really passionate about food are really passionate about love, and I see that in both of your writing. They're just things are on a different scale than I think. You know, you can be really intense about both these pleasures, you know, pleasures of
certainly.
Of the palate and else otherwise. Yeah. So, and yeah. Julia, you really put yourself out there in I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti, the title. It says it all pretty much. I mean, so what did you feel like this was a kind of cathartic experience
I guess
writing
it
about
was.
It?
I remember just sort of breezing through the writing of it, but and sort of just suppressing whatever emotional backlash there was, and snacking a lot during it.
As you write in front of the computer, you're just munching.
Yeah, you definitely get hungry. You're like, I wrote a sentence, I'm starving.
Yeah,
and then. And then I think the catharsis came after. I mean, I felt the emotions of it. I felt more after the book was out mm-hmm. than when I was writing it. Mm-hmm. That's probably what you're going through.
Well,
right
I think
now, Julie.
I think yeah, you have to put some of that stuff on the back burner.
Yeah.
If you can't,
yeah.
then it means you're too close to it to write about it. And I
yeah.
you know, I made this terrible mistake of writing a piece. I was approached to write an essay for this anthology called Behind the Bedroom Door.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, there's some great stuff in the anthology, but I was approached, I don't know, maybe a month or two after my relationship with Dee and the book had ended horrifically. Uh-huh. And I was...
Worst timing ever.
Oh, God. I was just reeling. And the woman, the editor, said, you know, do you want to write something about your sexual experiences? And I said, yes. I know exactly what I'm going to write about. And I just... you know, barfed this thing onto the page, and you read it now, and it's like raw liver. I mean, there's
yeah.
I mean, it's completely like ripped out of my guts, and not in a particularly good or artful way. I absolutely agree. I think you have to. That's when you know you can write about
yeah.
it, when you have enough
yeah.
distance on it that
yeah.
you can, and some perspective.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I always think when I'm writing makes me hungry and horny
yeah.
all the time, and And I think it's because I'm always
right. I think the horniness was suppressed with medications for me when
I was there
writing,
you go. So well, that's convenient.
I keep having the snacks.
That's convenient.
Try that next time. I mean, well, you know, maybe you don't want to.
No, hook me up. That might be good.
I got a lot of spare Lexapro.
What exactly are these? And maybe I could use some.
I never said that. I never spoke about this before. So this is, you know, this is fresh material. It's an exclusive here on
exclusive interview today on Heritage.
So probably why, yeah, that didn't happen. But because that would have been good. I mean, that would have been a better, or at least to mix it up a little.
Mix it up,
what,
a little this, a little that.
What?
No.
Sorry, I'm just thinking. I told my mother to listen, and.
Absolutely, I love it. Mothers should always be listening. They're, you know, the guiding forces in food and our love life.
Yeah, so. That's right. It's all their fault, the food and the love life. So they'll have to listen to the fallout.
So, Julie, in your book, you cook for a lot of different kinds of men, and you as we heard, you kind of sum them up and what they'd like to eat. How do you do that? I just want to know.
I don't know. You know, you just see like a little punk rock kind of like hipster guy, and you're like, he just wants like meatloaf and potatoes, you know? And you see some guy who's, you know, some Euro trash guy, you got to work a little harder for him, maybe, you know?
Well, you sound like very positive stereotypes.
Are they positive? They're not positive? Is a stereotype positive? Ever. No. Anyway, yes, I've cooked a lot of different things for a lot of different men. They all liked them very much, and they all equally sort of didn't like me, which is, you know.
You know.
It's been my journey.
But we like your food. I mean, there's a sense of pride in everything you've cooked.
Yes.
And everything you've loved and put out there.
Yeah, I'm happy for all of it.
Yeah, only makes you stronger.
Right. It makes you a better cook and a better person, probably, once you get through it.
I believe that. I want to believe that. Definitely. And in the aftermath of the book, are you planning on writing a sequel? Maybe you loved and didn't lose. Is that possible?
That is possible. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's all I'll say.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. I could write a sequel. I could do something completely different.
So much harder to write about being happy, though.
Yeah. That's boring, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I've been watching the reviews coming out just recently for
Cleaving.
Well, no, God, let's not even talk about my reviews. No, we can't actually.
For Elizabeth Gilbert.
Elizabeth Gilbert's new book.
I just read that in the Times. Yeah,
and it's just really interesting. It's so much harder to write about being happy.
Well, I kind of feel like getting married is a sellout anyway. So I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I might want to get married, but I might not want to then write about it. And I did in the end.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think it's a really, she really did find herself in a strange place where people are expecting a certain kind of book from her. And you know, I know Liz slightly and she's a wonderful woman, but that's a difficult, especially when you sell the kind of numbers that Eat, Pray, Love was selling.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's something that I ran into with Cleaving, is that I came out with a book that was not what people were expecting.
Right.
From the woman who wrote Julie and Julia, right. Or from the woman who was played by
Amy Adams.
And, I mean,
that adorable girl
that
did
adorable
that?
Little girl. Exactly. And people get very angry, very, very, just viciously angry, violently angry, because there's something so...
Well, maybe it's a good thing that you brought out such a strong reaction in people. I mean,
provoking is good,
provocative,
I guess.
People think
book.
They own you, too, I guess, in a way.
There
because
is
you're
a,
not only a book, but you're Amy Adams. You got a lot to live up to.
Yeah, no, people feel very proprietary and as if they know me, which I'm sure you get that as well. I mean, there's people expect certain things based on your writing, and
right.
And so when you try to do a different thing or try to, you know, expose a different aspect of your life, it's tricky for people. It's funny because people feel threatened. It's like, I didn't cheat on you. I mean, I'm not ruining your marriage.
Right. I think you I'm just going to interview you too. Julia and Julie and Julia. You weren't shying away from the dark places in Julie and Julia either. So I don't think it's so shocking, actually. You know,
I don't.
And if they
like
were smart, they'd know that.
You know,
and if they read your blog back in the day,
right,
you know, your blog
right.
is
certainly
an exploration of the good and the bad and the food. And
it's a movie problem. People watch the movie, and I mean, if you go from the book of Julie and Julia to the book of Cleaving, you get that through line. But going from the movie and
that's
then going
such
to
a weird
story
place to be in. I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah,
a movie problem. I'd hate to have a movie problem in my life.
Would you really? Actually, it's a fairly decent problem. Oh. I mean, I'm not going to complain just too much about this.
Maybe it's just a...
Well, I'm against the happy ending, and that's why I'm... I mean, I don't know Elizabeth Gilbert, and I don't want to say anything bad about her, but, you know, I'm sorry. But I do feel like people in my book were sort of, you know... I felt for a while like, oh, I don't have the happy ending, and that's the problem. But at the end, I kind of stand by unfinished things. And so I think, mm-hmm. Again, it was brave of you to go out there and sort of...
You know, I mean, I felt very much the same way writing Cleaving, that I didn't want... to tie it up with a bow.
And, yeah.
I mean, it was one of the reasons I wrote the book, was that by the time Julie and Julia came out, I was already dealing with this much more complicated, difficult, painful, thorny situation. And it's not that anything in Julie and Julia wasn't true or authentic to the period, but I had this whole new understanding of how difficult this relationship was, or, and these relationships were. And I wanted to honor that. I wanted to honor that life is...
Mm-hmm.
just incredibly messy, and, yeah. And to then to write a second book and then go, oh, but now I fixed it, you know, little bow, you know, would be almost, you know, people get offended that I wrote about personal stuff, but I would feel much more dishonest if I had been, and then we all went, you know, yeah. Oh, it was happily ever after, because that I don't believe in happily ever after.
Yeah. You're not a fiction writer, you know, you have to be honest and faithful to the reality, to the truth that you went through. And so I'm just excited that there's so many different endings, happy, bad, cutthroat.
Right.
And I didn't read the rest of Elizabeth Gilbert's book, but I'm sure it's like a different whole story. And there's so many different stories about food and love these days, it seems.
Yes, it is.
Way too many.
It's a growing genre.
It's all your fault, Julie Powell, I think.
Oh, darn.
So we're just going to have a short little break and come back. And the song we chose today, Decemberist, it's in the beginning of Cleaving. And why did we just choose it? Does anybody want to?
I called it out.
You picked it, which I thought was a nice, sweet call of you. I use it as I quote it in the beginning of the first main section of the book. It's about, I can't, of course, remember the lyrics off the top of my head, but it's about how people are joined as a joint, some bones can be joined, and
it's
intimate and complete, and that's very much what I felt when I was dealing with
it. We together meet a limb.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So Red Right Ankle, we're going to hear that by Decemberist, and then we're going to come right back. You can call in too. It's 718-497-2128. Be right back.
This is the story of your red right angle, and how it came to meet your leg, and how the muscle, bone, and sinews tangled, and how the skin was softly shed. Now it whispered, oh, it's here to me. We are bound by symmetry. Whatever differences our lines have been, we together make a whim. This is the story of your red right ankle. Of your gypsy uncle, you never knew, 'cause he was dead, and how his face was carved in
red. Hey, this is, we're back here on Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. This is Heritage Radio Network, brought to you today by Whole Foods. And we're here with Julie Malucci, author of I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti, and Julie Powell, author of Cleaving, A Story of Marriage, Meat, and Obsession. So we've been just chatting about their respective projects, writing styles, and we just got a call from a reader, from Annie, asking these writers, how did food change your sex life? And that's something that's explored a bit in the book, but let's hear it.
Anybody know if it changes your sex life, but I think it enhances. I mean, I would think that people who really enjoy food are probably people who really enjoy sex.
Sensual pleasures.
And it's a way of loving. I mean, cooking is a way of loving and giving. So that usually probably do prepare you for
isn't it weird when you meet people who are just like, I'm just not that into food. It's just
it's one of those things like not being a dog person. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Actually, an interesting thing with me happened with Dee in the book. Likes, presumably still, to eat. Was never a cook. And we actually sort of got, at the very end of the book, I talk about how we get back in touch. And we spent this month sort of like, what happened here? What the hell is going on? And we didn't sleep together. We didn't do anything. But he asked me to teach him how to cook. And it was really fascinating trying to teach him how to make a pork chop. And just the physicality of it terrified him. Like, the popping of the oil in the pan, like,
really?
Made him jump back. Wow. And, you know, he just didn't understand the sort of physical extremes that go into
Did it make you cooking. Realize he wasn't all that, maybe?
You know, I'd like to say that was the end. it wasn't entirely, but it really was very telling to me. I was like, that's and he was sort of an exception, because I really do agree. I think if you run into people who are like, food.
You're like that. There's a
something.
Cold.
There's yeah. like there's a coolness there, and mm-hmm. he actually did just one very well, and the other not so much. But and was sort of idiosyncratic that way. But I mm-hmm. definitely agree. I think that in addition to of course the giving aspect, and you're cooking something, it's an act of love. It's also just an incredibly physical act, mm-hmm. and you're involving all of your senses. Mm-hmm. All
your
the
understanding.
Time.
There's this level of understanding, I think, of
and risk. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you can burn yourself, you can mm-hmm. cut yourself, right. you can, and that to me is
right. danger. Is
has that in common too. Oh yeah,
we're willing to go there. I don't even feel the pain.
Battle exactly. scars here showing off.
Julia Child's talk about developing asbestos hands in order to cook. We do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part and parcel with our lives, and I guess our sexuality as well. Mm-hmm. I would think, right?
It's funny. I think people are at different levels. People can be really into food as they like to eat it. But then when it comes to cooking it, there can be a complete disconnect there.
Yeah. Definitely. So it can
be like, you know, you never see how, or raw meat, you know, with butchery, people are freaked out by seeing raw meat.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
fish or something.
Yeah. yeah.
So
it's a strange thing. It's, I mean, even, you know, my brother is a great cook, actually. He's a fantastic cook. But he can't handle chicken. Can't like touch it.
There's a salmonella like scare back in everyone's head.
No,
I think
it's because it looks like chicken.
They
it
do.
Looks
I
like
know.
A bird.
I kind of feel that way too. I do feel a little sad for it when I'm putting sure. it in them. So yeah. But I was encouraged reading about your butchering about the seams and how it's meant to come apart. And maybe if I could see it that way, which I should. I mean, as a meat eater, I should be able to do all those things. I believe that just like I should like liver. But the idea that it was meant to come apart encouraged me to think, oh, right. maybe I could it's something I could do if.
Well, that was something that I learned about butchering that was surprising to me when I went in. I thought it was what everyone thinks butchery mm-hmm. is hacking and mm-hmm. tearing apart mm-hmm. and it's violence. And in fact, it's so delicate.
Yeah.
And this idea of the seams, that these muscles are joined by this connective tissue that shows, it makes a sort of road map through the muscle and or between the muscles and through the big pieces of meat and how it breaks down was beautiful to me and sexy as yeah. well.
And viscerally, it's like a better sense of anatomy once you
oh, yeah.
have that.
Oh, yeah.
Did that improve your sex life? Like, yeah. Knowing how to tear things.
Knowing how to butcher.
Exactly. Well, you know, I write in the book about mm-hmm. the theory Ripper. That Jack the Ripper yeah.
could
have been a butcher. You know, and that there is, I mean, when you think about what he did, that he took these women apart and the there's something so, it's horrific, obviously, and I've been horrified by Jack the Ripper since I was, you know, I used to flip through the books and see those pictures of, you know, the girl's Ugh. Liver sitting on the table. And, mm-hmm. and yet, when I started doing the butcher, I said, well, gosh, that's what he's doing that with the bodies after he's killed them and slashed their throats and, you know, violently. It's so different in a way. It's like he's, like this tiny bit of his brain that is so completely corroded just insane beyond any there's no way he's going to save himself, and yet there's this piece of me that's trying to find mm-hmm. something that makes sense inside these
compartmentalized.
Had someone only seen his talent and given him an apprenticeship early on, maybe things.
Well, exactly.
The lives
exactly
of a few prostitutes could have been
exactly
saved.
So. Exactly right.
Now, you guys are both passionate cooks, butchery aside. Did you learn from cooking at home, or was it just, I think I know you cooked from your, learned from your mother.
So yeah, I wouldn't say I learned at my mother's knee, but mm-hmm. it was something that my mother showed a great capability at, and I think somehow I just was a place I felt very comfortable cooking. Cooking
an
was something
skill
I felt,
too.
Yeah. It was something I never had any conflict about, whereas love was something that caused me tremendous conflict, just really because I was dating the wrong people, actually. I see in retrospect, but cooking was a place where I found peace, where I felt completely comfortable, completely confident about it, that I would pull it off. And even if I didn't pull it off, it was okay. Whereas with dating in the past 20 years in New York, it was everything. What did I do wrong? You know, how can I change it? How can I make it better? And food just exists for me on a very calming plane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, of course, I started learning to cook. I taught myself. I'm totally mm-hmm. self-taught.
Books,
and
yeah.
I started cooking in college for two reasons. First of all, because I didn't believe that anyone in Western Massachusetts knew how to eat. Coming from Texas, I just thought these people have no taste. And gotcha. Secondly, because I was in the process of snagging my now husband, and he.
So you cook for him too, to win him over.
Oh yeah. Oh,
nice job.
Thanks, man. he was subjected to all of my early disasters. I mean, one of the first things I ever made for him, I tried to do from Like Water for Chocolate, the rose petal whatever it was, and quail and rose petal sauce. Like, I got roses from, like, the 7-Eleven, and it was awful. And then, you know, I tried to make a seafood gumbo, and I in a non-stick pot with a plastic spoon, and wound up melting the bowl of the roux. So I didn't feed him that. But you know, he put up with a lot. And he was, you know, one of our first dates. He took me to prom, to a Belgian restaurant, and he ate escargot. I was like, who are you? He would eat anything, and I was pretty picky. So I really expanded my horizons in order to, you know, impress him.
Was his mother a great cook? Was his mother an adventurous cook? And I'm just assuming mother because
mother
I'm
and
sexist,
father
terrible sexist.
His mother and his father both were way more. They were kind of hippies. Uh-huh. They were way more adventurous than I was. My mother's a great cook, but very, you know. More adventurous
American.
Now, but yeah, very kind of straight ahead American cook, where he was being thrown, you know, crazy stuff from the very beginning. So he grew up with.
Well,
this.
Was there any one dish that kind of sealed the deal? You think, or
it was a long.
But wasn't
slow
he?
Seduction.
Was already yours, wasn't he?
He was kind of already mine.
You just wanted him to love you more.
I was cementing it because we had yes. Oh, I'm voracious. Actually, what happened was we met in high school, and then I went to one school, he went to another. We were doing a long distance relationship, so it was kind of cementing. Like, don't forget, on the weekends you're gonna come here. I'm gonna feed you, and those pretty little girls are not mm-hmm. gonna be able to feed you the way I can feed you. So it was definitely like making sure he kept me in mind. In retrospect, I probably could have done it without the food, but at the time it seemed vitally important.
That's what you wanted
important.
To do. You were drawn to do. That's interesting because for me, I didn't have any boyfriends in college, so maybe I would have done it, but it didn't occur to me to cook until late. Well, until I started dating, and that didn't happen for me until I was 23.
Sure.
So what exactly did you cook for that going away dinner meal?
That was the going away before I went to school was the disastrous rose petal sauce. So that didn't work out. So
okay.
Crossing
that off
once
my
he
list.
Was yes. Don't.
Did you suffer after that? Though, were you like, oh my god?
Oh, we just couldn't eat it. It was completely inedible. And I'd spent all this money on the little quails once he was up at school, I used to do a lot of like chicken fried steak, fried chicken. He loves my fried chicken, and I will do that for him.
Hey, Kathy, so we have another question. This one's from Tim in Park Slope through email. He wants to know if you guys are seeing anybody right now, and if not, if you'd be looking for somebody passionate about food.
Aww. Well,
Kathy, what about
who
you?
Who is this guy? I don't want to...
You want to send pictures?
You know, Yeah, I've been cooking for somebody a bit lately. But you know, we'll see. It's just like it's an evolving thing, you know. I mean, like, I can't go into any more of that.
I'm recently not available, Tim. Sorry. And yeah. Julie, she's got a lot going on.
you don't need me in your life. I can tell you that. No, we're I'm actually still married. Shockingly enough, if you read the book, it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
That
no.
gives, you know.
Sorry, Tim.
Sorry.
That's a good. It's a good story for all, you know, young women out there. Honestly,
things are working out.
I mean, you know, I just think it's so great to have a dialogue about stuff that is not, you know, a women's place necessarily in a previous time, and be able to talk about things so frankly and so honestly, and just filled with sensory details. I mean, from food to sex and everything. It's really exciting. So one thing I always like to ask people is, what is your perfect date meal? To cook or to eat out or to
first
to make somebody cook?
Well, you know, I mean, you kind of read mine.
The Valentine's Day livers.
I like the liver. Just, you know, it's a challenge and it's a test.
Yeah, it is a
test.
If
you can eat this, then right. I respect you. And if you turn Ooh. Your nose up at it, we're probably not going to work Ooh. Out. Eric loves liver and we have long, he, you know, really was the reason I started eating it. And
oh, really? So he liked it, so you made it for him.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. I mean, he really expanded my taste horizons in a lot of ways, and certainly awful meats and all that stuff mm-hmm. was in fact started by him. I also did feed liver once to D. I think I fed him chicken liver, though. He ate it.
Yeah.
He ate it. I don't
Did
think
you
he loved
mash it up
it.
In like a mousse or
No. It was just sauteed.
Oh, I've never done that.
Sauteed
okay.
chicken livers on I think with there were maybe on top of noodles or something. I can't remember exactly, but it was a Julia thing, I'm sure.
Liver, it is so sensual, just like the feel of it, the texture.
The texture of it. That's what I love about it.
So, yeah. Just what people usually don't like.
No,
so,
I know. Well, it's I write about it, actually in Julia and Julia, I write about liver. For some reason obsessed. but that there's something you can't ignore it. You have to submit to it, and that's why I
and
find it so sexy.
And it smells, too.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A very
it's metallic.
Pungent.
It's good. You know, there's you can take, you know, there's blood in there. There's it's
gory.
It's body, you know. Yeah. It's definitely, and I've copped in my life to the occasional sadomasochistic tendency, masochistic more than sadist. And there's something about liver that speaks to that to me. That you just it cannot be ignored. It's like being tied yes. down and forced. You know,
it's like being faced to look at a beating heart or something.
Exactly,
or
exactly.
Hearts. That's another story altogether. Yeah, yes, it's a good awful. So, Julia,
I would have to say pasta to
spaghetti.
Stay on message, to stay yeah. on my brand, because it is sort of the basic, you know, I would go for more of a basic, you know, comforting food that has carbohydrates, which, you know, keep you going.
And it's like, it's you, too.
It is me.
Yeah. So, put it out there.
That would be giving, yeah, my most authentic self, yes. Yeah.
Great, guys. So I'm so excited to try to cook some of your favorite meals in the books. I think everyone should give it a try, too.
Yeah.
And just don't be afraid to cook for people,
yeah.
for God's
definitely
sakes.
Definitely not. Don't be afraid to cook for yourself or for people right. is definitely what my message to the world would be. Yeah. Especially you're alone. I mean, the point of my book would be, especially when you're alone, it's important to take care of yourself well. And if you can't take care of yourself well, you're not even going to be able to begin to take care of other people.
Somebody else.
There's a deep, I think you're absolutely right. There's a wonderful, sensual, good treatment of yourself mm-hmm. to cook for yourself. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make yourself do it. But when you do, there's a whole different, we could go into a whole other little yeah. sexual
metaphor
here.
With a nice glass
here.
Of wine, it's also hard.
Exactly.
Cheers to that. I'm getting hungry right now. So why don't we
yeah.
have some
yeah.
pizza
Sounds
and
good.
Chat
Thank
some
you,
more.
Exactly.
And I can't wait to hear more about your guys' exciting projects. And thanks so much for being on Let's Eat In.
Thank you.
Have a good
you.
Week. I'll see you next week. I'm Kathy Irway.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.